Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. Aquanote is asking how long before Elon walks back his statement and kneels. I don't know. I don't think he will walk it off. I think he's been specifying, though, today that I don't agree with everything Scott Adams says, but we should protect comedy. So, in a way, he's already backed off on any sort of suggestion that he's in with Scott Adams and his statement on blacks. So, yes, that's his walk back, if you want to interpret it that way. Horsehair worms are internal parasites of crickets, and crickets are now being used in food. Look at this guy. He pulls an entire worm that lives inside a living cricket.
Ну, вот видите, да?
Возможно, живут в нас.
Да, возможно, живут в нас. И смотрите, как много. Это в каждой сарае, в каждом кузнечике.
Смотри, он выживает, начинает.
Блин, приближаешь.
Они
живут камеры отдельно. Надо снимать.
Это не кишки, это отдельные организмы.
Беленькие, черные.
Они белые, черные, их очень много.
То есть, блондины.
Well, I don't know if a part of this is its intestines, but you can see the contraction, and it seems to indicate that it's some kind of worm. Maybe there's a part of the tubes you see there that are the intestines, but I would be surprised if it was the whole thing, especially how it contracts.
Так что Алма-Ата может скоро пополниться.
Не только Алма-Ата, но и Москва, и Израиль.
Да, Израиль.
Более того, даже открыли, почему саранча теперь много ест. Оказывается, она питает не только себя.
А может быть, этот симбиоз был уже давно, поэтому саранча такая прожорливая.
Да. А никто не знал?
Да.
Ну, собственно, вот шевеление сюда свет.
Этим объясняется, да, ее
прожорливость. Еще есть.
Как на операции, только туда свет.
Dino Logovich says reaches for worm tablet. Oh yeah, there's an equivalent in humans, I hear, that lives in the intestine, but I've never seen it. Another anti-white attack in a school, as is the case pretty much every day. Just a bunch of people reported by Mark Collett here on Telegram. A bunch of people start attacking a guy. Thankfully, in this case, there's a teacher that seems to be protecting the guy. This is not sustainable. We cannot have populations that hate white people living side by side and constantly have no tool to protect white people from these assaults. This is basically the point of Scott Adams. There is someone criticizing what I said yesterday about the regression to the mean, Greg Delaney. So yesterday I said about regression toward the mean, that, you know, in terms of your two geniuses, you make a baby, will that baby be as genius as you? And someone was asking about regression toward the mean. I said, well, there's one statistical regression toward the mean. It's a purely mathematical effect. When you are one of the extremes, you should expect your next sample to be more likely to be toward the middle than you are. That is just a fact of mathematics, and that's what usually is referred to as regression toward the mean. But I pointed out that biologically, there is a second effect like this, which is that you are one extreme. Your partner is perhaps less extreme than you, but is still within the extreme. Well, when you combine those genes, it is very unlikely that the alignment of stars that existed into either you or her will reproduce in the child. You are shaking the dice again, and it's another statistical game that you're playing in which regression toward the mean can happen even more than it would in a normal statistical situation. So Greg Delaney says the following critique, which I believe is incorrect, but I thank him for pointing this out, and I will read it. He says, "Hi, JF, great chat, but your analysis of regression toward the mean and IQ is an error, because regression toward the mean is based on random selection, whereas mate selection is not. If your thesis was true, there would be no species evolution, because divergent members, offspring, would RTM, that is, they would regress toward the mean." Let's undermine the second observation here. If my thesis was true, that there is in the disalignment of the stars, that is, the shaking of your genes into a new being and only half of them going forward, if what I say is true there, would there be an absence of species evolution? I disagree. I disagree, because what I merely describe is what happens in a non-selective environment. That is, there's no reason to believe that higher IQ is being selected for, and therefore the 100 IQ is a direction that is at least equally, if not better, evolutionarily than being a genius. And so if there's any selection effect, it will actually drag toward even more regression toward the mean. Now, if we were in a world where genius is favored, where 140 IQ gives you more likelihood of making babies and surviving, then in that world, what would happen is you would have 10 babies. One of them would have the right alignment of stars, would be a genius just like you. And 9 of them would have the wrong alignment. And the one who has the right alignment of stars would outcompete the others. Offspring. So you can still have natural selection, even if you have a loose regression toward the mean that is statistical in nature. My statement about regression toward the mean is not an absolute one. You will not get back to the mean. To the contrary, because IQ is highly influenced by genes, you're going to have a genetic effect on the IQ of your offspring, but it won't be as big as 100%. It won't be a one-to-one relationship. That is the part that can be referred to as the de-alignment of star or the regression to the mean effect that I talked about. So I think that my example here shows that Greg's opposition is false. You can have natural selection going on, could take you in a different direction, but in the absence of natural selection, you would expect some form of regression to the mean, even if it's slow, even if it's not 100%. I need to install that button, that mute button, that will ease my life. Some random bloke has sent a super chat. He says, "Hey, Jeff, what did you think of the Day of Hate thing in the US? Well, the Day of Hate has been happening this Saturday. We haven't seen much hate. Personally, I'll tell you what, you know, when Christmas comes, I can feel the Christmas ambience. But Saturday, I didn't feel any hate. To me, it was like any other day. I don't know. There's something about this National Day of Hate that is not putting me in the mood for celebration. I'm not feeling it. I saw no hate at all on the social media. I went to the grocery store. People were just serving me the products, just not hating on me. I'm not feeling the ambience. I feel it at Halloween. I feel it at Christmas. I mean, to a certain extent, that I feel it at the, you know, Day of the Queen. But I don't feel it at the National Day of Hate. It was a complete failure, this National Day of Hate. People were pointing out that the only reason anyone knows that this is even a thing is that Ben Shapiro somehow decided to say, "Fuck you for those who are celebrating the National Day of Hate." Oh, yeah, strong stance, Ben Shapiro. Strong stance. It's like no one... Even I didn't know about this day, and I learned it from the tweet of Ben Shapiro. And in fact, Even the tweet of Ben Shapiro, I was like, what is he talking about? I had to Google it, and Google gave me a list like it's the day of the day of the marmoset or whatever, and then it's the day of the sword enthusiast. And nowhere in there was it saying it's the national day of hate. I actually had to scroll down the Ben Shapiro tweet. And then eventually I found some people answering, oh yeah, it's the national day of hate. Never heard about this. And people have been pointing out that it looks like a Fed thing. Like, who would organize this but someone who has intent at monitoring hate? Totally made up thing. Crazy Catman said, I went on hating as usual that day. Not any more hate, not less hate. I felt nothing. Elon Musk sacks more liberal Twitter. By the way, tonight is a chill show because there wasn't much news. But I'll go through an argument that I've went through with Uber, with a fan of Uber Soy on the question of Jewish IQ. And it's very interesting because these guys are holding a dogma. They really want Jewish people to have a high IQ because their entire meritocratic view of current society relies on this. I don't have this dogma because whether current society is meritocratic, I think it's mostly not. I think we have undermined meritocratic system as of the free market a long time ago, many, many decades at least. So I'm not attached to the idea that the current world is meritocratic. But it's a very interesting discussion because Uber Soy has fans that are pretty knowledgeable, intelligent, but they have this little failure that I detected and I want to talk to you about it. Elon Musk sacks more liberal Twitter staff, including top lieutenant. Apparently, even this girl who was fully rooting for the whole Twitter blue and the shift to Twitter 2.0 and the hard work culture of Elon Musk, even her has been fired. Well, I'm happy that we get even more firings. Apparently, there is there was 3,700 people out of the 7,500 that were initially fired, and now we have 200 more. Amazing. Keep cutting, Elon. I want my Twitter Blue subscription to be wisely used. I want you to use that money to get to Mars or whatever you like, but not to pay a bunch of dependent employees who have nothing to contribute. Elon Musk appears to make jibe at 200 Twitter employees he just fired. I don't agree. He said on Sunday, "Hope you have a good Sunday, the first day of the rest of your life." That doesn't seem like thrown at a bunch of employees just fired. I think it's overinterpreted here, over-extrapolated by the journal. I don't think it had to do with this. I think this is something you should think about every day. Every day you should see the day as the first day of the rest of your life. And I'm so thankful to be alive, so thankful for existence. I enjoy life, so wonderful. I've been doing maths these days, been continuing my work on the Goldbeck conjecture, chilling, spending time in family. Life is good. Saturday, me and Mama JF went to a restaurant that was very good. Go away, says JF. Hey, JF, I'm quitting watching your show. Have a good Monday and enjoy the rest of your life, /S. Yeah, go away. I don't think you can stop watching this show, go away. I mean, you would be pretty miserable without JFG tonight, let me tell you. There's a few people, I mean, I think there's plenty of people who could live without JFG tonight, but you go away. I mean, I don't see you on any other shows out there. Like, if you go watch Brett Weinstein, he's not going to interact with you the way I do. If you go watch Sargon of Akkad, he's not going to exchange with you. I think that your trolling, the only places that it passes in an official voice is here at JFG Tonight. So I wouldn't want to stop the show just for you go away. I think you would be in a depression the next day. After nearly 2 years, I'm back. Jeff Berwick is back. I was thinking at first that it was an old version of Baked Alaska. And I was like, holy shit, Baked Alaska has gotten old in jail. That's pretty much how Baked Alaska will look like in 20 years from now, isn't it? Well, in any case, I'm happy that Jeff Berwick apparently is back on Twitter. Perhaps he was among those banned for COVID-related opinion. I had him on the show back in the days. I think I spoke with him on the Public Space episode. He was the dollar vigilante, you know, lots of opinions in the Bitcoin space. And probably got banned for his stance on liberty with respect to the medical stuff. Gray says, oh yeah, Baked has been in for 2 weeks now. Yeah, I think Baked Alaska got 1 month in jail or 2 months. I think he's gonna be fine after this. I don't think he's gonna be that aged. All right, let's get into the argument. And by the way, good news. Uber Soy will be responding to my video of yesterday. He has accepted the challenge on Twitter. Not yesterday, my video of 2 days ago, Weinstein's Emergency. Because in that video, I still manned the statements of Leather Apron Club. And I made a single statement. I boiled it down to a single statement that I think Uber Soy hasn't quite succeeded at destroying. And I would like to hear Uber Soy on this distillated the statement rather than, because Leather Apron Club, very intelligent guy, obviously, and developed a superb argument, but he has connected things in this argument. Like when you're an experienced debater like me, you know that less is more. And you know that tacking on arguments more and more eventually undermines your case because you have the little Uber Soy boys who will chip at you by taking your weak arguments. Sometimes it's just better to stand with balls on the public space and say, there you go, that's why you're wrong, that's why I'm right, period. Do you have something to say? And so I did that in the video 2 days ago, and Uber Soy has confirmed on Twitter, challenge accepted. He will be providing a response to my Steelman on his, what he says, his second YouTube channel. What is that? What is that, Uber Soy? I'm Papa JF. I deserve a response on the main channel, whatever that is. Stephen Robinson says, JF, have you reframed the abortion debate? As per your yesterday's show, one is either pro-life or pro-discrimination. Oh, well, You want to talk about abortion having disparate impact? I haven't stood yesterday for the idea of disparate impact. So I don't think that would be a just. I think you're doing a non sequitur here. You're trying to hold me to a standard that I've never adhered to. I'm not saying disparate impact is the way to go and to pursue racism across the universe, starting from here on a threshold of disparate impact. That is not what I said yesterday. So let's see one of these fans of Uber Soy, because it's very interesting, our discussions, because you end up realizing that who's Uber Soy anyway? Yeah, no idea who he is, but he's kind of a new crowd figure. Who's trying to? He says he's right wing, but you know he's trying to engage with more right wing arguments that are to his right, I guess you could say, like the Leather Apron Club's statement that Jewish IQ is overrated, and he's trying to undermine these arguments. So that's where he seems to stand. So I want you to understand from American greatness that this guy has a construct in his head that is keeping him from accessing the truth. And that construct is oh my God, so many of my beliefs are attached to the fact that Jewish IQ is high, that if I was to abandon this belief, I would be stuck for, I would be stuck to start believing things about white people and black people that I don't want to believe. That is quite interesting that I pulled this from this guy by trying to prod him and test him. Go away, says Jeff. I think that is the commenter's statement was related to your statement yesterday that equated choice to discrimination. The commenter was extending this idea to the concept of pro-choice. Ah, okay, that was a semantic joke. Well, still, then that is a joke, and that, I don't have to answer that. So, American greatness. In response to my statement to Uberside that I would like to have a response for my Steelman of Leather Apron guy, American greatness says, I don't particularly care about the IQ claims, but do you talk about nobles, chess, etc.? I didn't find LSA's arguments compelling there. And I said, for now, I concentrate on the question of, do we even know this IQ claim to be true? Nobles, I know to be a corrupted entity that is socially influenced and not directly meritocratic. Chess, I believe LAC has a good point that it is not a good proxy for IQ. The point of LAC for chess is you look in certain Eastern European countries, they have a high representation of chess champions, yet their average country IQ is lower than Western Europe. And in Western Europe, some of the countries would have a higher IQ but less chess champions. So to me, what that suggests is that to end up as a chess champion, you certainly need a high IQ, but it is not a direct proxy in that you probably need other things like a culture of chess playing. And if you don't have the culture of chess playing, you're not going to have any representation in the championship, yet you can have high IQ as demonstrated between the Western and Eastern Europe difference. So, as far as the original claim, I think that we should treat the question of the IQ should be treated independent of these supporting arguments from chess or from Nobel Prizes. Because you don't know that Nobel Prizes are a good proxy for IQ. You don't know that chess is a good proxy for IQ. And so, we have to ask, do we even know first, without looking at the rest, do we even know first that the IQ measure that we do is correct? And I've argued in the show 2 days ago, it's not correct because we have a specialized and self-selected category in the category Jewish. And when we do specialized selection like this in the religious denominations of Christianity in the US, we end up with the Episcopalians. They end up with a similar IQ as Jews. So perhaps there are phenomena in society that lead you to identify as a Jew versus not. And when it's not, perhaps you're lower IQ. And when it's not, what are you going to identify as? Well, white. And perhaps there are people who identify as Hispanics. They eventually get mixed children. What are these mixed children going to identify as? White. There are people who have partly African ancestry, but it's so small that they don't look black. What will they identify as? White. So because of this, the white category is non-selective in those studies, whereas the Jewish category is extremely selective, because to even have a conception that you're Jewish, you're going to have to be part of a family that probably transmitted some traditions to you, probably has more parental care, probably has more parental IQ. So see that there's a selection effect here. There's one category that is elite and selected, and then it leaks into a category that is broad and unspecified. That is a big problem for making statistical affirmations about whites versus Jewish IQ. Dino Logovich sends a super chat. He says, Bob Dylan won the Nobel for Literature in 2016, therefore high IQ. Yeah, I mean, the Nobel Prize system is a super corrupt entity. It's a political entity, and they will tell you, oh no, it's a bunch of Swedish guys that choose it. Yes, but the Swedish guys receive visits from the top scientists who want to receive their support. And they receive flowers and gifts, and sometimes before a member of the Committee of Nobel will vote for a scientist, decades can pass where the scientist will go see them every year, call them, hey, I want my Nobel, don't forget. So it's a highly social system, and it's a highly connected networking world that academia is around distributing the Nobel Prizes. So I'm not going to use this as a proxy for IQ, sorry. So American Greatness, in response to me, says, do you believe the same for Pulitzers, Turing Awards, Fields Medals, etc.? And for chess, the discrepancy remains after normalizing for country, i.e. American Jews are overrepresented among American champions. Now, the second statement, even if they were overrepresented within America, can I assume that there is a general culture of chess across America that is equal for everyone? Or is there some families, states, cities where it's more likely to be brought up into a culture of chess, and some other states, some other families, some other environments where it's less likely? So it doesn't undermine my argument. The observation that chess is culture dependent in terms of getting introduced to it. Now, you do need a high IQ for sure to win, but that is not the question. The question is there a linear correlation between the number of chess champions and the IQ of the countries they come from? Is the number of chess champions a proxy for IQ? And I claim that it is not. And even if the American Jews are overrepresented in America, that may just mean that there are various cultures of chess adherence across America. So I say, to me, the normalizing across countries doesn't work, because what the country data suggests is that cultural exposure to chess can on its own blur the chess champs as proxy of IQ working hypothesis. As for the other prizes, I know less about them, but it's certainly possible. I don't know exactly. I mean, the Pulitzer Prize, it's a journalism prize. And I can only imagine journalism to be even more corrupted than hard science. As far as the Turing Awards, the Fields Medal, I don't know. But again, it's not hard to imagine how they would be as corrupted as the Nobels. He says, yes, I wouldn't argue that it's a proxy of IQ globally. Clearly, if chess isn't commonly played in China, then they won't produce many grandmasters. But within a culture, it's a useful data point that's consistent with a broader pattern of Jewish intellectual achievement. Well, maybe it is, but again, it doesn't tell me anything, especially if you don't recognize it as a proxy for IQ. Then we're far from a conclusive set of evidence here. He says, as Leather Apron Club correctly said, what this debate is really about is whether Jewish achievement is based on merit or not, i.e., why are Jews 18 times overrepresented in the Forbes 400? With that in mind, how would you measure the relative merit-based achievement of a group based on available data? And I said, you have to ask, is our society truly meritocratic? I don't think it is. My general knowledge of industries and employment indicates that it relies on social networking, nepotism, political corruption, and money. But it's hard to have a scientific measure of these things. And here you have the logical jump that he does, which reveals to me why he's so emotional about this issue. It's because this guy is working with an assumption in his head that if Jewish are overrepresented in business, and if they and if what explains this is their high IQ, then I cannot abandon this observation ever, or else I'm going to have to be forced to acknowledge that white people are racist. He's going to be forced to acknowledge that, oh, well, if Jews have gotten in such good position through nepotism, then the advantage that whites against blacks have in the industry must also be explained through nepotism, and therefore we don't live in a meritocratic world. This is all irrational. You shouldn't you shouldn't be attached to a fact, because if you abandon this fact, your universe becomes less more burdensome morally for you. Like this guy's problem is that ultimately, if we undermine the argument of Jewish high IQ, then it places him in a view where, oh, well, then Jews are nepotistic and whites are nepotistic. To me, it's not a problem. I'm open to the idea that perhaps whites are nepotistic. I think that they certainly must not be as much as Jews if their overrepresentation in those fields doesn't seem to quite take as much as it does with the Jewish community. But I don't have an issue recognizing that, yes, perhaps there are intrinsic biases, implicit biases that people carry, family links, a desire to be around people that look like you, and perhaps some form of that racism could play in a decision to employ. Go Away says, Jeff, is there a correlation between nepotistic behavior and IQ? We're not there yet, because I'm challenging the view that we even know the average IQ of Jews in America. So he responds to this. So do you believe that white overrepresentation and black underrepresentation may be due to discrimination or racism on the part of white people? Sorry, I tried muting me and somehow it didn't mute. Sorry for the cough. So the fact that he goes there tells me that he is associating various observations in his head in a way that he shouldn't. The question of whether you know that thing is independent of unrelated things that you believe are connected through a moral lens. See? So I said to him, that's a very complex question. Are whites racist? And would that explain their overrepresentation in certain fields with respect to black? That's a very complex question, but I wouldn't reject the hypothesis per se. Here's one of the problems in solving this question. Suppose you have people preferably hiring Jewish CEOs. Suppose that by doing so, companies are actually increasing their general chances of success, because there is favorable treatment of Jewish CEOs in the industry in general. Is that racism or is that meritocracy? Well, it's both. The fact is that racism is not a natural and exclusive category. It's not either or in relation to other causal explanations. People tend to treat racism as it's either racism or it's something else. But the reality is it's not that way. The reality is, let's say you're in business and you happen to know that you're in a business where there are a lot of your competitors that have people that are overrepresenting Jews in their employment practices. In that kind of business, and perhaps you're in a business that benefits, for example, from political connections, and then within the political connection network that you need to support your business, perhaps there is an overrepresentation of Jewish donors and Jewish people in this community or that community related to politics. Now, you hire a Jewish CEO because you know that it's going to be better for your relationship with your competitors, is going to be more informed about the network of collaborations that are possible with the political domain, the lobbying sector, and you're going to be more likely to be successful. Now, if you do this, have you committed racism? Well, you chose to hire a Jewish CEO. You chose to do this instead of hiring someone of another race. But you also gain money by doing this. You actually improved your enterprise. So racism and meritocracy are not at odds with each other. Sometimes it's the same thing. This is what the left has to understand, and this is totally linked to what I was talking about yesterday. Discrimination, choice, it's not separate things. It's the same thing. When you choose based on things you know, and sometimes the things you know are averages over observations you've made in the past. Therefore, there is no separation, experimental separation possible in society between racism and meritocracy. Sometimes a very meritocratic system will lead to a lot of racism. Go Away says, I hired a Jewish lawyer despite being accused by some of being anti-Semitic. Looking at you, Brett Weinstein. Explain that, Ubersa. Oh no, you're getting into the I have a Jewish lawyer. I have a Jewish lawyer, therefore I'm not racist argument. Oh my God. So he tells me in response, and this is where his boomerism, belief in blind meritocracy of our society comes in. He says, I have a hard time believing Facebook, Google, Snap, Oracle, etc. succeeded because they had Jewish founders. More fundamentally, I don't think a startup company can succeed the way they did based on favorable treatment of a CEO, and Jewish overrepresentation is most prominent in founders. That is fascinating, that he cannot imagine. It's super easy to imagine for me, and I presented an example here. It's not hard to imagine at all. A little ethnocentric preference here, a little there, a little in the employment process, a little in the funding process, a little in the political donation process, and voila. But you don't seem to have much personal experience in the matter. And what I mean by this is when you've been into these businesses, you realize, just like I demonstrated with, you know, suddenly Lex Wexner wanting to hire me as a reviewer of underwear models. Just because I was friend with Jeffrey Epstein. When you've been through the industry, you realize pretty much everyone has been escalating the scale through social networking, family links, some sorts of favoritism, some of which kin related, some of which not. But there is basically no one at the top that didn't get their position through some sort of connection. And that includes also the links between the political world and the private sector, and the way that the actions of the political world will influence who wins in the private sector. The entire system is corrupt, so it's not hard to imagine at all to me. American Greatness says, similarly so for hedge fund founders, where you can clearly measure performance against the market. And obviously, overrepresentation is very strong there too. And I said, so you think there is no ethnocentric preference in how billionaires choose to hand money to a specific hedge fund? Or that there is none in the political processes that make those hedge fund decisions fruitful or not? We have a host of examples of how ultimately hedge fund strategies rise or fall based on two sets of circumstances. One, who's willing to save them, who's willing to give them their seed money, who's willing to get them started, and how big they are at the start, and how big they have to receive and support if they are in a direction of failure. And two, political actions. Political actions influenced by private lobbying that eventually make the properties of a given hedge fund super rise or super fall. We have plenty of examples, and I will give eventually the example of Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi, as a private asset manager of her own assets and her husband's, is constantly benefiting from what she knows will happen because she's causing it to happen, and the profits that she makes on the private market. DK Shadow says Epstein ran a hedge fund. Exactly. And if you know how Jeffrey Epstein got his money to become rich, to become somewhat rich, you understand that, yes, it is a network of ethnocentric interest. Jeffrey Epstein wouldn't have been running a hedge fund if it wasn't of a handful of less than five different millionaires and billionaires who trusted him. And I don't think he would be anywhere where he ended up in terms of success on the private market if it wasn't of these connections that he had. So he says, I'm talking about performance, not AUM. And for the most part, no, with respect to the second question, no. Individual hedge fund performance relative to some index are generally not impacted by politics. Obviously, this is sector dependent, i.e. not the case for pharma investing. And I said, whoa, 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 a naive man. Nancy Pelosi must be very high IQ then. You won't make me believe, out of all the very high, very exposed publicly cases that we know of, you're not going to make me believe that this is all of it. It's the tip of the iceberg. Most of the indirect favoring that happens through politics and that ends up rewarding certain sectors of the private economy, they pass under the radar. We never hear about them. It's so hard to have a whole theory of a conspiracy there. And of course, you will get called a conspiracist to bring it up. But you won't make me believe that what we see at the macro level happening in these high-profile things like pharma is not also happening at the lower level. Now, to my example of Nancy Pelosi, he answers, no shit. She invests in sectors where she has an edge. How can you generalize that to an entire sector? I said, I have not generalized, because in that conversation, I'm still just asking myself, do we know for sure that our IQ measures of Jews in America is correct? Did we take the proper methodological precautions to assess this fact? We haven't. And so nothing that this guy said is all theory and is all, oh, well, if you abandon this belief, you're going to have to explain to me this and that. Okay, we can get to explaining how you get a Nobel Prize and how you get to be a chess champion. But you're not going to take these things and undermine my methodological argument. It's irrelevant. It's a red herring. He said, so just to be clear, there's no way to measure merit, and therefore the claim that blacks are underrepresented due to discrimination from whites is unfalsifiable and may be true. I said, there are ways, but none will be perfect and without polluting signals in our worlds, as is the case for all of sociology. There is a difference between unfalsifiability and the fact that no method is available in our world to readily test it. So we may not be in a circumstance that allows determining what is meritocracy. We couldn't even agree on the definitions anyway. Like, what if you end up being rewarded in a meritocratic system for a racist decision? Is that meritocratic or is that racist? So it's a problem that we don't have the tools to address. We don't have the natural isolating experiment that we would need to say it's one or the other. And so as long as this is the case, I'm not going to let questions about side stuff, about whites and blacks, to undermine the methodological argument that I've made in the case of the Jewish IQ. It is still valid and left unaffected at the end of this decision. At the end of this discussion, sorry. So it was an interesting conversation because it allows me to understand, okay, that's why a bunch of people are triggered by doubt around the Jewish IQ argument. It's not just that, oh, they have a meritocratic argument for Jews that relies on this. They have a whole web of beliefs that they're very attached to, that, you know, if Jewish IQ isn't that high, then it's all going to fall, which gives me even more pleasure at the idea of continuing on this quest of undermining this argument alongside Leather Apron Club. So I think I'm going to keep talking about this subject, and I can't wait to see and review the Uber Soy critique. Let's see what he has to say about my Steelman. Bonham Bonham says, I find that managers in tech companies in Quebec are also very nepotistic. I mean, in Quebec, it's horrible. I mean, it's like I had an interview in a hospital at some point just to be like a random employee. Back in the days where I was working at a grocery store. And the only reason I got in that interview is that I was... I had a girlfriend and her sister worked there, and it's always a sister of a cousin of a sister. It's so frustrating because you're there with quality work, and you know I'm a quality worker, but when you try to pass the opaque wall of human resource women who are like, they're like zombies. And at some point, I've abandoned the idea of being employed. That's what threw me into streaming. You know, it's just I'm tired of having to satisfy a random woman who doesn't even know about the job she's employing me for. Oh, well, your CV seems to be saying other things than what we're looking for. Yeah, you stupid cunt. I've done other things, but I've done them well. And I can certainly wash dishes for you. Understand? Now, of course, saying this will not get you employed. Of course, they don't like the truth. And so I have to work in the truth-telling business on the free market here on Odyssey. Coinbase suspends Binance stablecoin trading. The San Francisco-based cryptocurrency exchange referred to its listing standards in a tweet. So BUSD, BUSD, your funds will remain accessible to you on Coinbase, but you won't be able to trade them. You will have to withdraw them, apparently. So BUSD is getting attacked by the SEC. Let's not forget that BUSD is not an official legal holding of Binance. What's happening here is that Binance was clever enough to not be the legal entity that holds the BUSD. They have delegated the work to a firm named Paxos. Now, I don't know to which extent Paxos is legally isolated and doesn't have the same employees. I don't know to which extent they share resources with Binance. But the deal was that Binance would give its name to the cryptocurrency that Paxos would emit. In that way, whatever happens to BUSD, and no matter how hard the SEC goes at them, it is not fundamentally threatening to Binance. And in fact, Paxos, in response to the SEC lawsuit, has dissociated from Binance completely. So I don't know what will happen with these BUSD, but the deal was that Binance was licensing their name to Paxos. So Paxos was able to use the B in BUSD. But Paxos is designed as an independent corporation that can fall or rise on its own without bringing down with it Binance, which when you see what happened with FTX and their own token, and you know, when shit hits the fan, you saw that this token dropped in value extremely, and it put FTX in even more trouble than they originally were. You can understand the cleverness here of Binance. It seems that Binance has set themselves up so that if there's a legal attack on the stablecoin market as a whole, they're still just an exchange and they could delist BUSD. So the whole issue that SEC is taking is that BUSD, they say, is a is a security. And this is the argument by which the SEC attacks a lot of the crypto. This is what they've done with LBC, Odyssey, you know, Library. There's all these laws around security. The idea of a security is like stocks and like papers. The papers that prove that you are somehow invested in a way that is promising you some return if the investment or the collective work to which you are subscribed is successful. So stocks qualify as security. There are other things that qualify as security. And you don't have to identify as a security. It's like the government will declare that you are a security. And most of the time, what protects Bitcoin from this kind of thing is probably simply the fact that the Bitcoin founder isn't around anymore. Probably the fact that he remained anonymous and that he didn't make an enterprise out of it is what makes it hard for the SEC to go after Bitcoin, because, okay, at this point, who funded it and who had the first Bitcoins doesn't matter anymore. It's now a non-controllable system. But when you have an identifiable founder who gives this crypto, who can use this crypto in a way that suggests that their success will be tied and that somehow it could gain in value or drop in value according to realities of the market, then it's easy to point as a security, and you can catch whoever identifies publicly as the emitter of that cryptocurrency. So potentially all crypto can qualify as securities. And the thing is, securities, you know, it's possible, just like normal corporations do, it's possible to sell securities, but you have to get your employees to follow the security course, and you need to announce your security sales in advance, and you need to have everyone licensed so that they can emit the security. It's all, you know, legal red tape and crap that really is annoying from a crypto space perspective. Because anyways, people know, first, people know when they get in crypto that it's all about, it's a high risk enterprise. So it's not like you can have a good counselor that truly shuts down your doubts about crypto. The reality of crypto is, we know it's a virtual world and it could be worth nothing, but it's worth something right now. Everyone is pretty much in that mindset when they get in crypto. It's not like when you can expect a financial specialist to really inform you about the risks of having the Facebook stock or having the Apple stock. We know it's a meme. We know one can fall and another can rise. And we know 99.9% of the crypto will end up failing. and it's not like having, it's not like the woman who sells your crypto. Is there a super chat that I've missed? Speaker's Corner says, haha, I just want to know what donation level I need to beat to be number one. Oh yeah, the greatest donation amount was 1,000 by White, but he gave 1,000 and then he gave 101. So that was 1,101. But I think you cannot give more than 1,000. So yes, the security law, you know, having all these people in a crypto business like Binance following the course for security will not give you any more protection. And the reality in the crypto world is that all cryptos that have been targeted by the SEC have had major market failures, major drops of price. So like the legal and regulatory environment in crypto is causing more trouble than it's solving really at this point. So there are different approaches. Some people think that perhaps in the future, crypto companies and people, even people creating shitcoins, will register as a security sales. Another path is perhaps we will develop more and more anonymized technology so that people never end up getting attacked by the SEC. And another path that is possible is that we will always have a Bitcoin-like process for new crypto emerging, and that it will always be better for the founders of cryptos to just leave their work to the public and just disappear like Satoshi Nakamoto. Satoshi Nakamoto, is that his name? Satoshi, anyways. So yes, a big problem, but a problem from which Binance is probably already set up legally to isolate themselves and not suffer from it. DeSantis signs the bill that's killing Disney World's corporate kingdom. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis on Monday signed a bill that takes control of a special tax district surrounding Walt Disney World that, as Reuters report, for half a century allowed Walt Disney Corporation to operate with an almost unprecedentedly high degree of autonomy. Dissolving the corporate kingdom ends Disney's self-governing status, ends Disney's exemption from the Florida Building Code, ends Disney exemption from state regulatory reviews and approvals, ends Disney's secrecy by ensuring transparency, ensures that Disney will pay its fair share of taxes, prevents leftist local governments from using the situation to raise local taxes, imposes Florida law so that Disney is no longer given preferential treatment, ensures that Disney's municipal debt will be paid by Disney, not Florida taxpayers. Bravo, Ron DeSantis. That is a punishment by Ron DeSantis for Disney to have gone after his new family laws that were relating to parental rights with education and not having teachers, you know, talk about sex to young people, which was falsely dubbed by the left as the "Don't Say Gay" law. So Disney didn't. We now understand from Ron DeSantis' book that Disney didn't want to get into that fight against Ron DeSantis. In fact, the CEO of Disney was talking with Ron DeSantis on the phone and saying, I don't want to get into those politics, but I'm receiving a lot of pressure right now. There are a lot of powerful people around Disney who want me to totally go at you. And Ron DeSantis was telling him, don't get into this, don't attack me. And Disney ended up conceding to the pressure, going after Ron DeSantis and, you know, saying we will release all these pro-LGBT movies to get our revenge and we will say gay. And Ron DeSantis is now giving them an absolute punishment, historical punishment. They lose a favoritism that they had benefited from since the beginning. they have been basically the most unlegislated, unregulated corporation probably in the US. They had basically a kingdom, a corporate kingdom on which regular laws did not apply, and now it's over. I find this absolutely hilarious. Ben Shapiro is talking about the Scott Adams case. He says what Scott Adams said was racist. And here's the thing. If you substituted the word white for black in his rant, you would immediately be given a top editorial post at the New York Times. So here is his statement. By way of example, the direct quote from Scott Adams, but the races switched. If nearly half of all whites are not okay with black people, according to this poll, not according to me, according to this poll, that's a hate group. I don't want to have anything to do with them. And I would say, based on the current way things are going, the best advice I would give to black people is to get the hell away from white people. Just get the fuck away. Because there is no fixing this. And Ben Shapiro was pointing out, you can hear this kind of commentary pretty much every night on Joy Reid's show, or at Slate, or Salon, or the New York Times. He's right. He's right that if the races were reversed, that would not have led to the cancellation of Scott Adams. Angry Sicilian says, go hook up my plow. Okay, what is this? Is this a snow blower that you have to hook up on your pickup truck? John Drake says you would get a standing ovation at the Oscars. Absolutely. Scott Adams today was pointing out that his cancellation is now full. He says, my publisher for non-Dilbert books has canceled my upcoming book and the entire blacklist. Still no disagreement about my point of view. My book agent canceled me too. So Scott Adams is asking, are you guys on the left? Are you guys telling me on the left that someone who's subjected to abuse or hate should stay in this situation? And one of the very nice comparison that he does is, what if you had a Jew and there's a room? And in one room, there's 50% of the people there that are Nazis. And in the other room, there's no one. Would you recommend for the Jew, or there's no other room? Let's say that the Jew can just run away from the room. Would you say that the Jew should enter the room where there's 50% Nazis or neo-Nazis? Or would you say it's a reasonable thing for him to leave and not go into this room? That is the situation that Scott Adams presented. He said, if according to this poll, there would be more than 50% black people who says it's not okay to be white. So would you want to expose yourself to this hate, or would you not want? Shrigma Mail sends $10. Thank you so much for the support. He says, hey, Jeff, after all that Donald Trump did during the 2020 pandemic, I will vote for Ron DeSantis in the Republican primaries. Also, DeSantis has a track record of being a social conservative more than Trump. Fully agree. That's why I know that in the right, there is currently a kind of hate against Ron DeSantis. And people are trying to say, oh, well, he's a slave of Israel. Wait a minute. If we're talking Donald Trump versus Ron DeSantis, I have two slaves of Israel here. Do you expect any sort of pushback on Israel for Trump? No. So whatever Ron DeSantis is on the Israel question, I don't give a shit. It's not a comparative basis on which he can be worse than Trump. Trump knows that Israel doesn't care about him. He knows that he's overdoing stuff for the Jews and that they still hate him and not vote for him. So in any way, Trump is certainly worse than anyone. He has demonstrated his failure to stand in front of Israeli terrorists. So that's not a comparative basis, but one comparative basis, and you get it right, it's the social conservatism, the position on medicine, the vaccine, the lockdowns, and I don't want Trump at the head of America anymore. So yes, for me too, it will be Ron DeSantis. Now, I'm not telling you that I'm going to be as enthusiastic about this election if it was Ron DeSantis versus Biden, let's say. I may not be as enthusiastic about it than the 2016 election, because I don't think it would be that much of a victory. I'm not sure DeSantis can do much at the federal level, and I don't know if he would have the legislative backing, because at this point, the Republican Party has demonstrated that they are just as bad legislatively as the Democrats. They are big government. But certainly, it will be my preference for Ron DeSantis to win. I may not be super enthusiastic about it, but it will still be my preference. Some random bloke sends a super chat. He says, did you ever read John Derbyshire's The Talk that he gave to his kids? Very similar to Scott Adams' speech and got him fired from the National Review. No, I will... is that a book or is that a blog post? I will search it here. The Talk with My White Daughter. Is it this one? Subsequently, an either insanely ignorant or willfully obnoxious National Review columnist, now fired. Okay, so that's not the original text. John Derbyshire, The Talk. Yeah, because there is this this talk in the left. They often talk about The Talk that a black parent must have with a black child. And this talk is supposed to inform them that the police are racist and that they have to be careful with the police because they will kill them, which is exactly not what you should tell these children. You know, you should tell them, don't resist to the police because people who resist to the police die. But they all veer this into a case of racism, which leads your children when they commit crime. They feel that they are the victim of racism still during the arrest. And so you're basically priming your children to resist because as they feel justified in what they've done and they feel justified that they shouldn't get arrested and they feel justified in, oh, well, even if I committed the murder, this police is still racist, you end up creating more resistance in your children. But so it seems that what you're talking about is an equivalent of The Talk for white people. Interesting concept. I'll have a look at it and see what he says. Silver Spider says, I hear all the time that black parents need to have The Talk with their children about the police. Meanwhile, blacks are rarely ever killed by the police. Yeah, I mean, it's... If you wanted to go at it from a purely statistical standpoint, it would be much more efficient to have a talk with your children about not being late at night, hanging out in the gang lifestyle, because that will get that is much more likely to get your child killed than a police arrest. Much more likely. Throwback to that time, so someone has unearthed an old tweet of Scott Adams, and I don't know, Scott Adams was in Charlottesville. It is unbelievable what they will discover on you. Once you get canceled, they will go back in the past and apparently Scott Adams was in Charlottesville back in the days, and he answered in his defense, nope, I interviewed attendees who were not with the marchers. I disavowed the racist, but wanted statues to remain for historical purposes, as do many black citizens, by the way. So Scott Adams was one of the very fine people Scott Adams was one of the very fine people on both sides. I didn't know this at all. I didn't know. It is so interesting in light of the current development. Wow. Amazing what they unearth on you once they really go at it. An asteroid in the laboratory. So apparently they broke down a rock that came as an asteroid, and that's just how it looks. Doesn't look fascinating. Looks to me like this is just a rock that happens to come from space. But I guess they can do microscopic analysis and get an idea of the structure and the composition of these asteroids. Arab leaders bring Syria's Assad back in from the cold, angering the US. Well, you know, it's pretty ridiculous how the US, basically for Israel purposes, is trying to isolate Syria, has been bombarding this country forever under Trump, under perhaps Barack Obama even. And Israel using also the opportunity of the earthquake to continue destabilizing the region. It's nonsense. And I do hope that the Arab countries around, they don't side with the US and Israel here and show some solidarity. Women's sexual partners before their first marriage, the inflection point on things like number of premarital partners was much earlier than many think. Well, it's not earlier than I thought. What we see here is that starting in the 70s, there is a constant drop of the one partner woman. That is, a woman who has only known one guy before the first marriage. It drops from the 70s, drops up to the 2000s. And then there's a little backlash after 2000. It's like, okay, we've reached points of polygamy that shouldn't be possible. And meanwhile, the other lines, like 4 to 5 partner, is increasing from the 70s up to the 2010s. This is women's liberation, says DK Shadow. Yes. So it is not interesting. And of course, virgins before marriage here is this line. And just like the one partner line, it's going down, 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 and down. To the point of never recovering. There's not even a backlash on this line. This is expected. It has resulted in absolutely no advancement of society, no gain in happiness of women. It is just the cuck carousel that we have created with society. It's not even good for women themselves. It's not good for anyone. Creates a lot of incels, because when a woman can rotate across 4 or 5 partners, she will try to grab higher and higher class partners and will leave behind the undesirable. Whereas when she has a one-shot decision to make for the man of her life, she's going to consider less the decorative aspects of the male and will consider more his value as a loyal and enduring man for a long time. So everyone loses, society loses, children loses, the emotional stability of women loses. There is no reason we did that. And like most things in society, it started showing massive symptoms around the 70s, 1970 and onward. Unmasking prejudice. Professor denounces maskless people as racist, ableist, and classist. Met up with some fellow COVID-conscious friends on a lovely cafe patio, and finally put on my masquad, hashtag masquad, rose gold decal onto my flow mask. Love it. What? This is an aesthetic addition to your fucking mask? It's time to remove it, lady. racist and ableist. Holy shit, these people. It's like, before COVID, there's been a series of respiratory viruses that you've participated in spreading. And even now, with your mask, you're still participating in spreading. But suddenly, it became a point of social credit to be displaying the willingness to wear the mask. But you guys are taking it to an extent that is unacceptable. Stop it. No one knows if decades-old nukes would actually work. Atomic weapons are complex, sensitive, and often pretty old. With testing banned, countries have to rely on good simulations to trust their weapons work. The guy was explaining, for all we know, they might very well just blow off at the launch site. Well, hopefully they don't. Hopefully they don't. Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. You know, so many mechanical things in there. You have, you know, all of it relies on creating a critical mass. Sometimes it's in a spherical way. Sometimes it's, well, the old version was two balls just colliding. Anyway, you take it. There's some things that could go wrong with time, with rust, with whatever. I don't know. I don't know how many of them still work. A mass casualty mine collapse in China. Elias Schaefer tells us to wake up every day and remember it could be your last. Appreciate every moment. It seems that these workers are currently working on their trucks and everything. And look at the massive fall of the entire mountain onto them. Holy shit. I mean, that's what happens. You're just digging into the ground, and the ground has not been designed to withstand what we do to it. I mean, this was a massive amount of people. Look, one truck, two truck, three truck, and you see them, they are advancing. So I guess there are humans driving these trucks there. They are advancing, and look at this. I think we see some movement here. In China, this was. Wow. Well, we are playing with the limits of nature. There's no guarantee that the soil can be stable after you chopped an entire V-shaped amount out of it for mining purposes, and we pay the price of our attack on nature. Mexican president tweets image of mythical health as possible distraction amid widespread protest. The nighttime photo by the engineer shows what appears to be the mythical woodland elf. So apparently he wanted to drag away the attention from protest in the country. And so nothing better than a little, is there such a thing as an unidentified tree hanging object? A UTO instead of a UFO? A UTO, unidentified tree hanging object. And it seems that this thing has two eyes. Could be a human, could be some other creature of some kind. DK Shadow says the US is doing the UFO thing, so they have to do something different. Yeah, yeah, the UFO is quite the diversion. I can't believe it. Yellen is in Ukraine, announces another $1.25 billion. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen. I mean, at this point, we get these news every 3 days or what? Stop it. This is $1.2 billion that will go into the suffering of the Ukrainian people. You're just going to lead to more Ukrainians being sent with more weapons toward the front line so they can get smashed by Russian missiles and Russian bullets. There is no use to doing this. Engage in peace, and then if you're going to use any money, use that money for rebuilding a valid Ukraine. But I wouldn't even want to use money for this, but if you're going to waste money, don't waste it on human suffering and maximizing human suffering. Biden admin quietly admits that the White House 9,000 unused oil permits talking point is wrong. That will be our last news item for tonight. Fossil fuel industry producing energy despite administration's inaccurate and misleading numbers. Okay, so the Biden administration was trying to make the fossil fuel industry look like, oh, they're asking for permits, but they're not even using them. And I guess that's just, you do exploration, sometimes you have priorities, sometimes you have 10 different places you could drill in, you choose one of them. Inaccurate and misleading numbers. Reducing the the Biden administration quietly updated a federal database that shows how many unused oil and gas drilling permits that it has approved, reducing the number by more than 2,000. Okay, so they had misevaluated the number of truly unused drilling permit. Okay. That is it for tonight, boys. Thank you for being with me. Thank you for everyone who's supporting the show through Super Chat. If you enjoyed the episodes this week, it's the right time to join our Subscribestar or our Backed By. If you want to go crypto, support me through Backed By. The links are in the description below. If you want to go through regular money on a monthly basis, subscribe to the Subscribestar. That is my favorite way to receive monthly support for the show. Much love, everyone. I will see you all tomorrow. Silver Spider says, hey, JF, do you have time for a last super chat? For you, Silver Spider, I will remain here. I will take a last super chat. Crazy Catman says, night gang, don't forget to like it / hot it. Yeah, it's not a like on Odyssey, it's a fire. Let's see if Silver Spider, I don't know how quick it will be. Does it take a clicking? Does it take entering your credit card detail? I don't know exactly how long it takes to send a super chat, but let's hope that Silver Spider can find the way to do this. Yes, Lendold Guntram says, stream on fire! Yes, we got a lot of likes and fire on the last two streams. I think I'm super happy of these subjects we've covered. Silver Spider sends $5. Thank you so much. He says, hey, Jeff, I recently had to talk to a friend who is 32 out of dating a woman 42 who had sex with over 50 men and a failed 8-year marriage. Eventually, he broke up with her and then felt bad. It was hard to convince him not to ruin his life. My God, that is a dramatic story. Because there is no way there is any function for him to be with a 42-year-old woman other than, you know, self-satisfaction that he's with a woman. That's all that he's going to please. He's going to cradle his brain into a delusion that, oh, I finally found someone. It is the result of just the difficulty of the dating market is so hard emotionally to engage with that this guy wanted the heroine version of it. He wanted the delusion. He wanted the illusion injected in his brain that he was in a couple. But there is not much you could have said to him, I guess. But here's how I would approach it. And if that doesn't work, then you cannot save your friend. But the way I would approach it is, listen, man, I'm your friend. Let me tell you about what's happening here. You are experiencing trauma from the normal dating market. The function of the normal dating market is to find a woman to make babies. By going for a 42-year-old woman, you are going for someone who cannot make babies. And so you are cradling yourself in a delusion. It's like buying a car because you absolutely want a car and need a car, but that car doesn't have wheels and it doesn't have an engine and it doesn't have transmission. It is absolutely useless to your life. All you will do is consume a delusion. Now, you want to consume that delusion because you have been traumatized by the difficulty of the actual market. But let me tell you, friend, the actual market is all there is. It's the only game. Getting on the side and playing that fictitious game is not playing the game. And ultimately, this 42-year-old woman will probably be just as abusive and as bad as any woman you would have had of your age that could have at least given you babies. So you're running the risk of the emotional abuse just as much. And perhaps even more, because when you end up with 50 partners at 42-year-old, there's something wrong, perhaps, for a woman, because it's the woman who will have broken all these relationships for sure. You know, a woman who can be loyal will eventually find a loyal guy within 5-6 tries max. So, don't cradle yourself in this delusion. Don't play the fictitious game. The game of dating is for the goal of having babies. If you have decided that you wouldn't want babies in your life, then don't get a girlfriend. There is no function for a girlfriend other than baby making. Life is so much more endurable on your own. You can spend the rest of your life reading ancient Egyptian scripts and trying to find exactly who the people of the sea are. But since you're 30 years old, you are still in the real game. There is no reason for you to retire and go with the 42-year-old. Go in the real game, find a young woman, and reproduce. That is what he should have been told. I guess you tried telling him something like this and it didn't work. So be it. You know, there's some people you just can't help. It seems that you couldn't help your friend, and that's not your fault at all. Not your fault at all. That is it for tonight, boys. James says, haha, based. See people, enjoyer. Yes, that's my new meme. I've been tweeting about it. I've seen a meme about it, and I adopted the conception that, you know, when these women... Because I did that in response to a woman who was saying... People keep talking about old woman being alone and sad. But the reality is that the men are projecting when they say this. They will be alone and sad when they are old. And I was like, woman, we won't be alone and sad. We want you by our side. We want to be standing with the woman of our life. And looking at our children becoming adult and enjoying life and going on their own reproductive career. But if you drop us, we're not going to be miserable. We're going to do prime number research. We're going to do searching who the people of the sea are. We don't care. It's like, it would be much better for you and us that we stay together and watch our children grow. That would be beautiful. But our life isn't miserable without a woman. We can still go on and enjoy life, and we have our own curiosity that can drive us toward autistic things that couldn't possibly entertain you. Silver Spider says, thanks, JF, but for now they are broken up, but he keeps walking near the fire. Well, give him the talk that I just gave you and see if that improves, because he should definitely by now. I understand that he's not with her anymore. But he should have understood by now that this is not a way to live for him. That is it for tonight, boys. Much love. See you all tomorrow. Thank you.